Hello, I'm Brandon.
And I'm Justine.
And this is Ecozy Co-op, a podcast where a game journalist... God, I'm never going to get that straight.
This is exactly
why... I've done it once.
This is exactly why I did it in the test.
One of these days, I did it once. I will do it again. It'll be
our
50th
You used to do it a lot.
Okay. I'm a games journalist. You are Okay, you go ahead. You do it.
Okay. Brandon is a games journalist, and I am a creative writer. Should we say published author now?
I think you have to wait until it's actually like publicly available.
I don't know if we should just continue on the creative writer.
So this is the Cozy Co-op, a podcast where we talk about video games. Today's topic is going to be The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
That pretty, pretty game.
Pretty, pretty game. Now, remember me saying how Mario had like some chart-topping scores?
Yes.
This one did better.
Yeah, I can imagine why, and we'll get into that when we start talking about the game, but for right now, we are going to talk about video game news, which is what Brandon's good
news. At. I've not been doing a good job keeping up news on the website lately, by the way. I know that doesn't affect you much, but I do have some regular viewers that probably have noticed that. I apologize, people. It's been hectic. Here's our news. First, a new trailer came out for Death Stranding.
That wild, wild game.
The wild Kojima Guillermo del Toro piece of magic.
Is he involved?
I thought so.
I didn't know that.
Pretty sure, yeah. I know he's a character in the game. I know this much.
I don't know how that escaped my notice.
Pretty sure he's involved, yeah. Well, I mean, when you get a look at it, you can kind of tell.
I know Mads Mikkelsen and the dude from Walking Dead are in it.
Yeah, Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus.
Yes, he's the protagonist.
The Mads Mikkelsen one makes me laugh because I know how much Kojima loves that man in real life.
Well, you know who else is in it? Troy Baker.
I don't know who that is.
A well-known actor and voice actor.
Oh, okay.
He's done a lot of voices. I can't quite recall what with, but like you, odds are you've heard him.
Okay.
He appeared in this new trailer as a man with a golden mask.
Ooh, mysterious.
You see protagonist Norman Reedus carrying a person on his back, as his job is.
Yes.
He meets gold mask Troy Baker, who takes his mask off, like, superhero dunks it into the ground, where a bunch of arms come up and, like, circle around him, and then he pulls it up and he points it to the sky, and it, like, forms this giant dog-like beast that's about two stories tall next to him with its own golden mask.
Okay. Sounds like a Kojima thing.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on.
That's okay, you don't need to know.
But alongside this trailer, they show off some concept art for some future characters, revealing their professional actor-actress counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually get to see Guillermo del Toro's, air quotes, character.
Sure, yeah.
So that's cool. Next bit of news blows my mind. PlayStation 4 is about to support crossplay.
For everything?
For Fortnite.
For Fortnite.
The fact that they're supporting crossplay at all is very surprising.
Sony likes to hold on to things very, very tightly.
Well, I'll expand on my speculation in a second.
Okay. But yeah,
earlier today, as of time of recording, they announced, hey, we're going to start up a crossplay beta with Fortnite. So now, if you the gameplay, your accounts, and your commerce, i.e. your microtransactions, will all transfer between all devices for Fortnite. I think, and other people think this as well, remember me saying how the new Fortnite season is coming?
Yes.
It kicks off today.
Ah.
So I believe the thing that convinced PlayStation to finally allow crossplay was people could buy a battle pass for Fortnite on the PlayStation and it would be supported on all of their other devices.
Mm-hmm.
So someone told PlayStation, hey, you could be making sales doing this, but you're not because you're not.
Right.
So I think that was the final push that brought him to bring it in.
I mean, yeah.
So surprise, it's all about the money. It's like the CEO guy said that months back. It's always been about the money. They don't want you buying and enjoying games on other consoles.
And the thing about it is the same issue that we see in withholding things from people because they think that making it exclusive is going to give them more sales, mm-hmm. like Broadway musicals and the like. But there have been several examples of when authors have books in the library or the Monty Python troupe put all their videos up on YouTube, they saw huge increases in sales because people got to enjoy the content and then wanted to have their own copies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So every time a CEO is like, oh, no, we make it exclusive because then we're making more money. It's like, I know that you're not. I absolutely know you're not. You're making exclusives because you think that it makes it more special. But in reality, a lot of people don't want to put up with the trouble.
Mm-hmm. And like, I even can personally attest to the loss of money that Sony is making by being so limited about. Because do you remember me saying the bogus excuse that they gave for why they don't support crossplay?
Yes.
They believe it's the superior platform.
Uh-huh.
Well, I made the decision not to get Fallout 76 for PlayStation. I chose PC.
Because of the lack of crossplay.
Because of that. Yeah, I knew that that would be a problem for me, so I bought it. So now, yeah, that's a perfect example. Because they're losing sales because they're stubborn.
Not every person you know has a PlayStation, but every person you know has a PC.
That was the funny thing, is that, like, the only thing that kind of nudged me towards PlayStation was the fact that more of my friends have a PlayStation.
Than a PC? Really?
Well, they have a PC, but they don't have a good PC.
Oh, I see.
You know?
I mean, I could probably play it
so, on. That was my concern. But, like, yeah, so, with the no crossplays, and I'd rather have internet strangers than screw them.
Yeah, that's the takeaway, folks. It's always better to broaden your horizons financially and spiritually and emotionally. And
mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Fallout 76, a 12-year-old cancer patient got to play Fallout 76 early.
Oh!
Because, that was basically his deal, is he wanted to play Fallout 76, but he didn't know how long he had. So the community started petitioning together. They got Bethesda's attention. Sure enough, Bethesda showed up to his, like, hospital room with a full copy of 76, and they played.
Oh, man.
They played the full game, had a good time. He even got a Power Armor helmet signed by Todd Howard.
Ugh, that breaks my heart. I mean, we joke a lot about gamers and the video game communities and stuff, but the fact is, video games have such hyped up release dates, and you know so far in advance what's coming, it ends up being something that a lot of people look forward to, and when they're in dire straits, it could be the only thing they look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
It really does keep a lot of people going, so that is something to be said about video games, and particularly big important ones like this coming out as people do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets people through.
Yeah,
sorry to get super real on this podcast, but
like, same game. Like, there have been times where I've just been in a bad mood, but then I'll think, well, Fallout 76 is actually not that far away anymore.
The corner. Punxsutawney Phil said
I've already paid for it, so, like, I don't have to worry. It's just I'm going to have it soon.
Yeah.
That makes me happy, and, like, I understand that
Should
vibe.
I do it? Should I, like, pre-order?
No.
No.
Because we don't know if your computer can run it.
I can find
it. We ain't playing it on the PlayStation.
I wouldn't be able to play with you anyway if I did. Yeah.
Should I talk about that?
We had an incident tonight. Folks, here's a little PSA for you. If you own a VR, now, PlayStation VR has a cool little feature where
The PlayStation Move controllers.
The Move controllers, the wands, have nice little squishy spheres
at the ends. I think they're like soft silicone.
Yeah, so that if you hit something with it, just kind of bounces off. Now, the same cannot be said for other VR consoles, including
HTC Vive.
The HTC Vive, which can, in fact, ruin your TV if you happen to strike it with your Move controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the Lizardi household no longer has a cool flat screen TV on which to play the PS4. No. So, there you go,
it
Sony.
It finally happened. I've popped my VR television cherry with force. I apparently smacked my TV real good. And, yeah, there's a dent in it. It's all broken and whatnot. Now, you don't know my favorite thing about that fact?
I can't believe you have a favorite thing.
I do have a favorite thing. I was recording gameplay.
Like, yeah,
for my job.
You are getting you're getting a little bit of money for a big expensive TV.
My favorite thing is, eventually when I go through and edit that video content, I'm going to find when I broke my TV.
Yeah,
I'm going to hear that thunk. I'm going to go, oh God, that was it right there.
Put that in the video.
Yeah.
Put a little comment, TV broke here.
Yeah, afterwards just cut to like a picture of the broken TV.
Uh-huh.
R.I.P.
So,
yeah, I
folks at
busted
home,
my TV.
Watch yourself when you're gaming. It can get super real in a hurry.
Make sure you have enough room when playing VR.
Broken TVs are not just for the Wii.
See, that's why you gotta be able to sit down. Because chairs will, if you're in a chair, you can force an orientation. You know which way is forward.
Yes.
When you're standing, you don't know which way is forward. It's easy to get turned around and hit something behind you.
So just be aware that when you play VR, you want a nice
tight-knit spaces.
Nice big space and know where your orientation is.
So enough of my destructive wrath.
Yeah.
How about some Breath of the Wild?
I would love to talk about Breath of the Wild.
So we've not beaten the game. I know the full story because I've watched it.
So yes, Brandon watched playthroughs of it.
Mm-hmm.
I never did. The only exposure I had to the game was through, you know, the odd video that I saw on, you know, while browsing the internet. And while they were all entertaining, it only gave me a very small part of what Breath of the Wild was.
Yeah.
And again, we haven't finished it because the game happens to belong to my sister. And she's currently playing it, so I have to, like, just take it where I can. But since she was gone for the weekend, I was able to get in 3 or 4 solid days of playtime.
You got a good distance.
Uh-huh. So, as far as I can say on story...
Well, we will have our... We won't be nearly as spoilery because we haven't gotten to the end.
Babe.
Yes?
I cannot possibly be spoilery right now.
You totally can.
I mean, I could. Just
you
let
totally
me talk.
You totally can.
Just let me talk.
Okay, go on.
So... I'm just giving a quick overview, but, you know, I'm the writer, so I do the story.
I'm the video game
I'm the
boy.
Video game girl. So, as far as story, something that I think adds to Legend of Zelda games is you do have, like, dialogue options, but Link is, like, one of the only characters you never hear talk.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, that just kind of automatically translates to Link is mute. but I find that to be kind of an endearing character aspect. But I think that because you're playing this character and it's a weird amalgamation of both, like, the character Link and you projecting onto Link.
The player.
But it's done in a way that I really have not seen from a lot of other video games, especially in Breath of the Wild, with it being an open world RPG.
Mm-hmm.
It really gives you, because in other open world RPGs, you generally get a custom character.
Yeah.
This one is Link, who has a story. Who's
yeah,
got a backstory.
It's not even like you get to name yourself. You're Link.
Yeah. So it is a weird. Like I said, it's a weird marriage of both you and Link as the character, and it works beautifully, so that the story doesn't feel weird or, like, unrelated to you.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel involved in it.
You know, and speaking of the idea of, like, never hearing people talk, this is the first fully voice... Well, I shouldn't say fully voice... This is voice acted. They have voice acting.
Yes.
This was the first time that's happened in a Zelda game. In all of the past ones, it's just, huh? And then text.
I figured. Because...
But this one has, like, a weird British-sounding Zelda and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this one has voice acting.
I think it's supposed to be more of, like, a...
royal.
A royal accent, yeah. And yeah, that's really cool that you can hear. And it's not all the time.
No.
Some characters have no voice acting at all, minor travelers that you meet on the road. Some of the more major characters will have cut scenes where they talk and have fully voiced lines, but then when you're just in conversation with them, they just do the, ah.
Yeah, it's mostly been reserved for cut scenes, which makes sense. Like, I was happy when there was no voice acting. The fact that there was any at all, like, I'm down for that.
Oh, it like I said, it does these like, marriages of, you know,
concepts.
These, you know, two concepts in one. It really does it very, very well.
Oh, yeah.
Things and blend together very seamlessly in this game.
And this game is chock full of blending old with new concepts in the Zelda franchise.
Yeah.
Because, like you were saying, open world. This is, nope, it's not the first open world. That would be a lie. This is definitely different in its direction.
It's the most open.
Like, the only other game that I would call as open world as this one is, like, the NES games. And that was just because of the nature of NES. And those ones even kind of held your hand a little bit. This one, you're very, okay, so.
You just have no idea where anything is or what's going.
Have you been to the Gerudo Shrine, the Gerudo Town?
Not yet.
That's the thing. You haven't.
I was trying to go there, but I ended up at the shark place.
You've done the water place.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. You could have gone to the Gerudo place instead. It is like, it's that open world in that there isn't a linear path to take. It's not an open world with like a
main
brightly
quest
painted
line.
You can go any direction and all of them will help you reach your end goal.
There's one quest line where, so Link has basically forgotten everything.
Yeah, okay.
And one way to get his memories back is the slate he's traveling around with has some pictures stored on it that Zelda took 100 years ago. And he's, one of the characters tells him, if you go find these places and you go back to where these pictures were taken, you will probably get some memory back. Except that, like, you can select that quest, but you don't get a quest marker.
You gotta find
You
them.
Have no idea where these, like, specific spots are. And the only way I've found to really actually go and find them without just happening across them by chance is there is a traveling painter. And if you help him out in one of the towns, he then will be like, hey, do you have any place that you want to explore, anything you want to know about, because I've been everywhere. And you can be like, yeah, look at this picture and tell me what you know about it. And he'll tell you exactly where it is.
I love that they added in that feature, because when they give you the option to, like, here's these pictures, check them out, it's at a point where you've not explored, like,
you've explored
10%
like
of the map.
Two regions.
Yeah. So it is totally possible for you to, at the end of the game, look at the picture and then go, oh, wait a second, I know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's equally possible that you could reach a destination and go, wait a second, I've seen this, it's that picture. And yeah. I love how they did that.
And there's like 12 of them, I think, so there's quite a few.
A bit of an introductory explanation is, in this version of the game, Hyrule is more or less gone. It was destroyed 100 years ago by Ganon. You, Link, were put into a hibernation for 100 years. I can't recall why. It probably is some spoiler
because
reason.
Because Link was injured. Very, very badly.
Okay, so.
And they put him in the Resurrection Temple.
Gotcha.
The Resurrection Shrine, too. And it took 100 years for him to gain full strength again.
So you awaken 100 years in the future.
Drip.
You know, there's ruins of an old society, but there's also some, you know, villages and whatnot that are still youthful.
Thriving, even.
And you gotta reclaim memories and relearn everything and, you know, stop the antagonist, which has been festering for the last 100 years.
Are you gonna say the name of the antagonist?
I mean, it's Ganon.
It's Calamity Ganon.
But in this one, it's Calamity Ganon!
I don't know why, but I was like thinking about the game the other day, and for whatever reason, my brain thought Calamity Dan.
Calamity Dan?
Because it sounds like such an old West name.
You know, that's what I don't get.
It's Calamity Ganon.
Like, I cannot think of a Western anything that had an actual calamity, you know? But for some reason, I just associate the word calamity with the
Old West. Well, there's an old West movie called Calamity Jane.
Oh, you know what? Maybe that's what it is. It's probably Maybe that's, it. Okay. Myth
good, good, debunked. Good flick. But, yeah, so, as you rise out of the Resurrection Shrine, so Calamity Ganon is starting to gain enough power to really wipe everything out the way he intended.
Mm-hmm.
100 years ago, Link and Zelda and their team of warriors, their specialized Voltron team,
complete with giant mechs.
Complete with giant animal mechs. They almost got it, but all of the specialized warriors were wiped out. Link was almost killed, and Zelda was the only one left, and she's currently still trapped at Hyrule Castle trying to contain Ganon until Link can gather up new warriors to pilot the mechs.
Mm-hmm.
And come save the day, hopefully this time smarter with, you know, better knowledge and equipment on their side.
Yeah.
Now, the first thing that happens in this game, and I want to talk about this.
Okay.
The first thing that happens in this game is Link gets a Switch.
Go. Yeah. So your menu interface excuse for mechanics everything is called the Sheikah Slate. Because in this game's universe, the Sheikah were very magitech.
Yes, very technologically advanced magical tribe.
Yeah, so they had, like, you see the words data processing, and it's because of the Sheikah technology. And, mm-hmm. like, the robot enemies you come across were Sheikah robots.
Guardians.
You know, built by the Sheikah, but taken over by Ganon. And that's the Sheikah style, is like advanced society that had been wiped out.
Mm-hmm. And I'm gathering some politics going on there. Apparently, at some point, the Sheikah tribe was no longer trusted because of their technological advancement.
Oh.
And while they were still in good standing with the royal family, everyone else turned on them, and so the Sheikah that you do meet in this game have reverted back to a more simple lifestyle of farming, and they don't necessarily work with technology anymore because of what happened. I'm not clear on that, but it does add, like, quite a layer of depth to this game, because as far as you know, when you wake up, the Sheikah are responsible for a lot of successes. The animal mechs that were piloted, built by the Sheikah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me, this is just a bit of dialogue I got from somebody in the Sheikah town, but he was like, yeah, they turned on us, so we just kind of, like, stepped back from that lifestyle and lived quieter. And I'm like, why? What happened? So I don't know yet, but that is a bit of lore that I would like to look more into.
Speaking of a bit of lore, you know what? I'll save this bit for after the ad break, actually.
Oh, we're doing the ad break already?
I guess it could be... No, we don't have to yet.
Okay.
But I thought of some fun lore that I wanted to share. I will later. You know what I noticed about this game?
Oh, wait. Did we, like, solidify the fact that the Sheikah Slate looks like a Switch?
Oh, yeah. The Sheikah Slate's a Switch.
Straight up a Switch.
Like...
It was the first thing I commented on when I was playing the game, and then I thought about it later, and I thought to myself, why am I weirded out that Link gets a Switch when in Pokemon, you're running around with a Game Boy to,
another good example,
identify your Pokemon.
Every Pokemon game, the bedroom of the main character has the latest console.
Uh-huh.
Like, the Game Boy Advance, Ruby, Sapphire, Emerald, you had a GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it was connected to a Game Boy Advance using the adapter cord. Like, they did that every single game. The Red and Blue, they had an NES.
But that's what your Pokedex looks like, is a Game Boy.
But, eventually. It wasn't like that initially. It looked more like a pocketbook.
Mm.
But yeah, as the mobile games became more advanced, like the DS and whatnot, your Pokedex basically became a Game Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nintendo
loves throwing their stuff in.
I figured, yeah. self-referential. Can I say one other thing that is relating this game to another game?
Okay.
So here's something that actually kept me up one night thinking about.
Oh.
Okay. So we are 100 years after an apocalyptic destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Does this sound familiar to you? You're a character that wakes up 100 years after that apocalyptic destruction.
You're not... Fallout?
Fallout 4.
Are you...
You were sleeping throughout most of that destruction, so you wake up to a completely different world 100 years later.
Yeah.
Now, the difference is that a lot of the people, I'm guessing because they're elves, a lot of the people you encounter were around 100 years ago. A fair few of them, like Zelda, still around.
Have you seen Zelda, though?
No. But I'm
I think this situation with Zelda is a weird one.
Probably.
I'm only vaguely recalling, but I don't think she's just physically there. I think she's, like, magically spiritually stuck.
Yeah. That's fine. Like, that's something I'm figuring because I imagine she still looks youthful. The other people that you do meet that were there 100 years ago, super old.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They're still around.
Like Impa.
Yes. Impa is the name I was trying to remember.
She's a recurring character in the Zelda franchise, normally a Sheikah guardian for Zelda.
And then
you meet old Impa.
The scientist you meet, she looks like a 6-year-old because she was trying to reverse the aging process.
Yes. Benjamin buttoned herself.
Yes, but she was also around when the destruction happened. However, this is why it kept me up, because a question I've always had for Fallout is this nuclear radiation so bad that nothing can grow back? Like, is it just going to look that gray forever because we are a century later and it still looks exactly the same?
Uh-huh.
However, complete destruction was wrought across Hyrule, and societies of people are doing just fine. Like, they're worried about the monsters that are outside the town's boundaries.
Yeah.
But overall, they're getting along really well. The only other people that are dangerous are the Yiga clan,
mm-hmm.
who support Ganon.
Yes.
And they're just like a one-off traveler on the road. They're not really militarizing.
They are.
As far as I know.
Yeah, that'll be expanded upon in time.
But yeah, it's not like every other day raiders hit the settlements. Like, these aren't settlements. They're actual villages and towns that have been established for a long time.
Well, to Fallout's credit, Ganon does not emit radiation.
You don't know that. What is Ganon made? What is Ganon but a nuclear bomb?
If Ganon nuked Hyrule, I'm willing to bet crops would not grow still.
That's a fair point. It's not nuclear radiation.
It was destruction. It wasn't...
Also, Fallout is not a children's game.
That is also true.
But it was just something I was thinking about. I was like, wow, this is like the same setup, but completely different directions.
So, speaking of setting up, that's not a good transition. How about our ad break?
Let's do our ad break.
Beetle's Traveling Shop offers you the best deals every day. He has affordable prices on everyday items like arrows, frogs, and vegetables. His inventory changes by location and restocks daily. Be sure to check him out at West Nakluta, Lake Hylia, and Farron Grasslands, and many more. By the stables. Beetles. He's there when you need him. Can we talk about Beetle?
I would love it if we talked about Beetle. He's a gem.
Isn't he wonderful? So,
yeah.
Beetle's another recurring character. Do you know about Cid in Final Fantasy?
No.
There's a character in Final Fantasy. His only retaining theme is his name is Cid.
Okay.
That's it. That's the only thing. Like,
everything else
is
different.
He will act different, he will look different, he will have no relation otherwise, but he will always be called Cid.
Hmm.
It's kind of like that in that there's always this bull cut-headed, lanky dude named Beetle.
He does have quite the haircut. And the nose.
And he's got a schnoz on him.
Uh-huh.
There's always a shopkeep named Beetle. In every game. Well, it wasn't established immediately. I think Wind Waker was his first appearance. I'll have to check on that
one. I need to play Wind Waker.
It's not bad.
Looks like a fun game.
I think there's like an HD version for the Switch, I thought. I'll have to look back into that. We'll or was that it out. The Wii U? I don't recall.
Probably Wii U, but we'll
I
check
think it.
It
was Switch.
Well, we'll check it.
Yeah, so he's a recurring character. He's just this dorky dude. I love him because he has this voice that's just like, thank you.
He does.
Right? I love it.
It's the nose.
And one neat little fact about him, he always likes Beatles. Surprise.
Well, yeah. I mean, he straight up says it.
And sometimes, yeah, if you have a Beatle on you, he'll be like, hey, I like that. I'll give you a thing for it.
And it's hard cool. to get Beatles in this game.
It is. There's a lot of foraging going on in Breath of the Wild. I like that, by the way.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Finish your Beatle point.
Beatles are a recurring character, and I like him. Okay. He appears in every stable, by the way.
Yes, every stable I've been to, he's been there.
He'll even make jokes about you stalking him.
He's like, wow, you're here too.
Except for, I think, the Grand Bazaar Gerudo whatever place, where there isn't a stable. So he just appears somewhere. I can't recall mm-hmm. where.
It's his environment.
He shows up everywhere. He's a nice dude. I like him.
Now, this is something that we should talk about, is the survival aspects of this game.
Yes.
Again, another marriage of an RPG plus survival game that they pull off extremely well.
Amazingly.
It's very, very good. And so, as a lot of people know, you can cook in this game, and it's a very fun process. There's a little tune to go along with it and everything.
Because, like, you can find mushrooms, and you can pick apples, and you find bugs, and
you
frogs,
just
and
grab fish out of the water.
You can grab some fish.
You just snatch fish. With
your hands.
This is the only game I have ever played where you can obtain fish without a fishing pole. You just grab them with your bare hands if you can swim up quick enough.
Yeah. Well, you can collect all these natural items, and you could eat them for a small amount of health. Or you can grab up to 5 different ingredients, throw them into a cooking pot on a fire, and it'll become an ingredient.
It will become a meal.
A meal, yes. And this will range from, the most common thing of you just, it regains hearts. So it's like you make your own potions type deal.
Yes.
But some things have special effects that if you cook them together correctly, you will create new things. Like you can make potions that will like make you more stealthy, or you can run faster. You'll create food dishes that will regain stamina as well.
Or protect you from heat or the cold.
Yes. Yeah. So they added in this cooking mechanic, and they do it so well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bog down like a lot of survival games are.
Because the only limit in your capacity to carry things is in your weapons.
Yeah.
Your clothing, your ingredients, and your food items, you have no limit to that capacity. So it's...
Is there not a clothing limit?
There is not.
Oh, okay. You know, yeah, it's melee, bow, and shields. Yes. Those are the three that have a limit.
So they have a fix for that too. But as far as ingredients and foodstuffs, you don't ever have to worry about having too much of that, which is fantastic for me because I never know what to hold on to and what to let go of.
Yeah.
Except for things that don't directly have a use to me, like gemstones.
You can basically just grab everything
mm-hmm.
and not worry about it. And that's fantastic.
And then next time you hit a cooking station, you just cook up a whole bunch of food. Or elixirs or whatever, and then you're good for a while. Or until you run into another, like, catastrophe, and then you just drain yourself of all of your resources.
Eat all of you. And that's what I love, is the cooking's simple, too. In that, if I have literally nothing but Hylian mushrooms, I could throw all of them in a pot, and it would become a mushroom skewer.
And it would be a really good boost to health.
Yeah, and it would give me more, because I think if you ate a raw mushroom, it gives you, like,
half a heart. Yeah.
But
maybe
5 mushrooms thrown onto to become a skewer will give you, like, 5 hearts.
Yeah, so like, which is, like, full health for most of the game.
You might as well, and because you can eat while paused, you might as well cook. And like,
that's the other awesome thing, is the things that give you stamina, I have found the most useful, because you can eat at literally any time. You can be mid rock climbing and you can eat a meal that will replenish your stamina so you don't fall off.
Absolutely.
You can be swimming and you can eat, which is not advisable. Don't do that IRL.
You get cramps.
You will get cramps and you will drown. you can be in the middle of a fight and you can stop and chow down on something.
Yeah, and you're no longer limited to at most 4 health potions anymore, which is...
Because you make them all.
Fantastic. If you know you're going to get... Now, granted, you're limited to your maximum health. There are enemies that you will meet fairly quickly
who will
that
will one-shot you
if you're dumb.
So yeah.
You can't just think you're invincible because you have a million mushroom skewers. You still got to play a bit wisely, but they don't make you have to worry about getting enough health potions or anything.
Those enemies are another good way that this game blends old game styles with the new, in that you do just randomly come across big old bosses.
Yeah.
And you can avoid them easily enough. Usually, if you're not dumb like me, you can see there's an arrangement right here that would be prime for a boss battle. Maybe that pile of rocks isn't just a pile of rocks. Which is something that I... And then, you know, the guardians that are half buried in the ground. You're not sure when, you know, is it going to stay dormant? Is it going to wake up and shoot me? Those things will one-shot you.
Oh, yes, they will. The first, what are they called? Moblins? The really big ones?
Yes.
They'll wreck you.
Well, I didn't have as much problem with the moblins because they're not necessarily bosses.
Oh, no. The I think they're called Lynels.
Oh, yeah.
The
Lion Centaur. Yeah.
Those will hurt you.
They have some range.
Oh, yeah. They are not to be trifled
with. There are these other enemies that I super hate, are these, like, wizard things that float around and fire, like, electric balls at you.
I remember them now. I've not personally encountered them.
I've taken out a
classic one.
I've taken out a couple of them.
Wizrobe, I think they're called.
They are awful and I hate them and I will avoid them at all costs. Because they're not a boss or anything, but they're just annoying as hell.
I understand.
I don't think we really need to cover too much about how beautiful this game is.
It looks so good.
Every single blade of grass waves hello to you as you go by.
It is stunning to look at.
I think that's another thing that makes it so beneficial to explore is, yeah, a lot of the initial regions are mountainous green areas. But it doesn't take too long to start hitting things like a tropical California-looking zone or the desert or the, Zora domain where it's all water and stuff. However, I have not fixed the Zora domain yet, so I haven't seen it looking all pretty. It's just been very rainy and miserable.
What I think does it the most justice is... You'd think because this place is mostly open wilderness with some villages scattered here and there. So for most of your time, you're going to be spent just wandering in the wilderness. And the thing that makes it so enjoyable, in my opinion, is that you never have to travel far before finding something.
Yes.
You will either find some kind of natural puzzle, or a macoblin camp, or there'll be a new shrine, or here's a small group of people. You will find something if you just go a direction for a little bit.
And especially those natural puzzles. And that's what I was saying about being able to expand your inventory space for the weapons.
The Korok.
You can... if you ever come across a little puzzle of any kind, it's usually... a Korok hiding somewhere, and then you can get a Korok seed, and you can trade those into a specific dude to increase your inventory space, which is pretty cool. I have, like, 25 of them now, because I just keep nailing those puzzles.
Can I tell the audience something that you can't hear?
Do you need me to leave the
No, but like, plug your ears and make, like, noises or okay. something. I don't know. Can you hear me? Okay, so audience, right? Like, when she collects enough Korok seeds, she's going to be literally given a golden piece of poop. And I'm so excited for when that actually happens, because I can't wait to see her reaction. Okay, we're back. I just had to tell them something that, like, yeah. That,
I'm going to hear it when I listen to the podcast.
Oh, no. Oh, no! All of this effort for naught. You have to skip over that part.
Okay.
You have to. Or maybe I'll edit it or something. I don't know. You're not allowed to listen to this episode.
Okay. All right.
I've ruined the surprise for future you.
So, I'll try and skip over it.
Can I mention something that I found interesting about this game?
Absolutely.
There's no Navi.
I was about to bring up that. You get a few tech splash tutorials on how to use your Sheikah Slate and those mm-hmm. sorts of instructions. But as far as, like, finding things and exploring, you're absolutely on your own.
Oh, yeah.
Figuring out what enemies are and how they work and stuff, you get no tech splashes for them.
There's no hand-holding involved.
No. In fact, if you come across something new, you just get question marks until you pick it up and identify it.
Oh, yeah, new. And I love it because they're using one of my favorite game design tactics, which is let the level teach the player. The Sheikah Slate, you unlock what they call runes, which is special powers you can use. For example, bombs are now, you have an infinite supply of, and they come out of your Sheikah Slate.
They're awesome.
They don't deal a lot of damage, but like on a physics standpoint, they're fun.
I use them to blow up rocks and trees.
You can use magnesis to pick up metal objects. You can create ice out of water using the cryo whatever. You can freeze something in place in like time, hit it so that it gains momentum and it flies away, all that. When you go to a shrine to unlock this, the shrine makes you go through a trial relating to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the game teaches you how to use each object. It doesn't tell you. It teaches you. And it shows that throughout the entire game. There's an instance here where there's like an eyeball written on a bridge, right? And you'll notice there's some arrows on the ground and there's two arrows on the bridge near the eyeball. So, like, there's evidence that someone tried to shoot the eyeball, but they didn't hit it.
Oh.
And if you see that, people are thinking, well, what if I try to shoot the eyeball? And if you shoot the eyeball, you know what happens? Korok shows up.
I didn't think that.
You might not have seen it.
I feel like I have. I mean, there was something that I was trying to get the arrows out of.
I think it was outside of Kakariko Village.
Yes.
Another recurring Zelda thing.
So I should probably go back there and try that.
It does stuff like that. And it makes you learn. For example, the Koroks, they never really explain much about them other than, we're hiding everywhere, go find us. There'll be a point where you'll look at a rock and go, that's a Korok, I'm gonna go figure it out.
Yes. I discovered them entirely by accident. There's one on the Great Plateau that you start out on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember why I decided to jump in the lake, or like the pond or whatever it was, near where you first meet the old man.
Yeah.
But there was like a specific place for you to jump off and into the water. I think it was that I looked down and saw there was like a ring of water lilies. Oh. And I was like, oh, I'm going to jump into that. And I did. And then this Korok thing showed up. I was like, you found me. Go find all my other brothers and sisters. And I was like, okay, I don't know what the heck this is, right. But okay.
Yeah, you'll get to the point. You'll see like a circular formation of rocks and you'll know it's a Korok. You just got to figure out how to get them out.
Yes.
Can I tell you my favorite Korok hiding spot?
Yes.
The bed that you were sleeping in.
Wait, which bed?
The one you woke up
the
in.
The resurrection pool
The
thing?
Resurrection pool. There's a Korok in there.
Oh, I need to go
you
back.
You have to go back. Like, I don't know how far forward you have to go before you can go back and find him, but he's there. And I love this because I'm just imagining that for 100 years, this little Korok dude is just like laying next to Link's mostly dead body going, yes, this is a good hiding spot.
They do. I wonder, they must be long-lived because they're like, I'm just going to hide forever.
Yeah, because they're spirits. They don't age.
They're really cute. I love them so much.
Apparently, you're the only one that can see them. Classic protagonist stuff.
That's why no one else has found them.
Yeah, precisely.
Can I say one other thing that I forgot to mention when we were talking about exploring?
Yeah.
The reason that... I mean, sometimes there's not a lot to see immediately. Like, you do kind of have to come up on these puzzles.
Uh-huh.
In wandering around, but sometimes if you're like in the hills or whatever and you're thinking, oh, I have to get like way over here and you don't want to walk all that way, the reason it works out so well and you don't get bored exploring is because of the hang glider.
Yeah, and the rock climbing.
I cannot tell
and
you.
The climbing.
You do have fall damage, but it's actually very, it is.
Generous.
It's generous, yes. You can fall a distance before you start taking damage. But I can't tell you how many times in Inquisition I wish I could just climb the frickin' cliffs because I'm so tired of trying to go around every huge rock formation to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. In Legend of Zelda, you can climb anything if it's in your way.
I kept a close eye on this. The only time I've not been able to climb something is inside one of the shrine trials.
Yeah, because they don't want you doing
that. Because they don't want you cheating the trial. But yeah, you can climb anything.
You can climb anything, especially if you have enough stamina or enough stamina substitutes. Food, yeah, but
mid-wall climb lunches.
Right, which I do a lot because, again, I climb everything so I can get somewhere faster. And then when I purposefully find the highest point in an area, if I'm trying to get somewhere, I will go to the highest mountain, get to the very top, and then I will just jump off of it and hang glide in the direction of where I need to go. And it usually gets me over halfway there.
You'll cover some good ground, yeah.
In fact, the way you get to the Zora domain, you meet the Prince of the Zora at the bridge. What is his name? Sidon?
I have no idea.
I think it's Sidon. You meet the wonderful Prince Charming Shark Boy. Oh, I love him.
Such a fish, bro.
Love him so much. You meet him at the bridge, and then he's like, I'm going to swim all the way back because it's faster for me, but you're going to have to run because the rain makes the cliffs too wet to climb, which has been a continual annoyance to me. Always seems to rain when I want to climb something big.
There's a side mission where you have to transfer some fire between pillars. Mm. It'll rain and people will just lose themselves. Yeah.
So... Oh, I've done that one. It actually didn't rain when I was doing it.
You got lucky.
Yeah. But it is a very long way to run.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to, and it's very dangerous, I got to the first cluster of those goblin things, and they throw electricity at you. Now, you're already wet from the rain.
Oh, no.
And they all throw electricity. And Shark Bro gave me an elixir that lasts 6 minutes that gives me energy resistance. But after dying twice, I was like, you know what? Oof. I killed two of them and then just ran through the rest of the camp.
All right.
And that was basically my strategy for the rest of this very long path was I just ran. I would sprint and then I would sprint until my stamina was just about out so that I wouldn't slow down too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would stop sprinting and then I would start sprinting again.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got to the final leg, which is really funny because it's this downhill S shape that's also riddled with moblins.
Mm.
And I looked down at it and I was like, nope. And I got out my hang glider and just glided straight into the city.
Speaking of downward slopes, another feature I really love. Shield surfing.
Oh, yeah. I don't use that one too often because I don't like wasting my shields.
Do you have more shield than you need? Do you like moving downhills quickly? Try jumping on your shield and surfing that bad boy all the way to the bottom.
Oh, you can surf it forever.
I cannot tell you how many times I've tried surfing, hit something wrong, and then face planted then continued to roll down the hill.
Uh-huh.
I love it so much. There's been times where I'll run, I'll jump, land on my shield to surf, it'll break upon impact,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll start just tumbling down.
Just rolling down. I always, whenever I have to run down a slope, I always have the instinct to do the Mario roll.
Oh, because playing too much Odyssey?
Yeah, because that's constantly what I do. I always want to move faster.
Oh, yeah.
So I just do the Mario
roll. Gotta go fast.
But you can't do a roll in this game. You do shield surfing, which is considerably harder on resources. So.
I love it so much.
I try to make sure I have a cheap shield in case I do want to. I
love it. You gotta get a pot lid.
Yeah.
They don't block a lot of damage, but they're very durable.
Oh, good. I'll pick one of those.
They'll last
next
longer than like
one.
A Boko shield or something.
So, this is a very good game. We're kind of nearing the end now, but...
Yeah, this is very different from old Zelda games. If you like open-world RPGs, odds are you'll love this one.
This does it extremely well. Like we said, the survival aspects work really well. I mean, it gives you multiple ways to avoid the elements, such as, yes, you can cook a meal to stay warm in cold areas, or you can make elixirs,
Change your clothing.
Or you can change clothing.
Yeah, you have different outfits you can wear. You'll get set bonuses for some. Like, you have to adjust for, like, hot and cold temperatures. Outfits help with that.
And again, rewards for exploration. The more you find, the more little stuff you find, the more benefits you get for it. Like, ways to upgrade your inventory or your armor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very... It pays to really play this game.
You're rewarded for just doing whatever you want.
You can just run straight to Ganon, but you it's advisable not to.
I remember there's one instance. You were a good point of your love for paragliders. There was a shrine, which, if you haven't gathered at this point, shrines are scattered all across the land. You go in, you complete a trial, you get a spirit orb. Every 4 spirit orbs you can redeem for either more health or more stamina.
Oh, yeah.
There's one far out into the water that you're supposed to get there by boat.
Yeah.
You did not get there by boat.
I did not.
You climbed to the top of a mountain and paraglided all the way out into the ocean.
It's like 3 miles.
To this. And like, the whole time
we're far away.
We're sitting there going, can she make it? And you had to eat some food halfway through, I believe. Because... Using the paraglider uses a bit of stamina.
But I made it.
Fun little trick. I've tried to do it. I still have not. But you know how if you're in the air and you pull out your bow, you'll slow down time at cost of stamina?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're paragliding, let go, pull out your bow, shoot a fire arrow at a patch of grass. The fire that it creates will create an updraft that'll lift you back up in. And you have to do it all very quickly without running out of stamina. I've not pulled it
off.
I'm
not wasting fire arrows
on that. I've tried. It is a rough one.
And it's funny because I wasn't even jumping off the peak I wanted to jump off of. There was one that was closer to that island that also had another shrine on it.
Oh.
But I didn't feel like going all the way over there, so I just jumped from the one I was on.
Right.
And I still made it.
Before I forget, my favorite feature total in this game.
Okay.
If you see something, you can pin it.
Yes.
And when you pin it, like, you'll look at it and you'll hit the pin button, a beam of light will appear. And then you can look on your map and it'll have pointed out where that is.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. The idea of, if you can see it, you can mark it and you can go that direction.
Yes.
I love that. Because you'll be standing at the top of a mountain or something, you'll see the orange glow from some unattended shrines, and you can pin them all and just find them later. I love that.
There was an instance, if you see a meteor fall, follow its trajectory, pin where it lands, because you can go collect stuff from it. As far as I could tell, I wasn't sure if I had been able to pin the exact location. As far as I could tell, it was a collection of rocks that I could break open and get gemstones out of.
Maybe.
But yeah, pay very close attention if you can see where a meteor falls, because you might get something good.
Well, I think we've hit enough then, yeah?
Yeah.
We recommend this game if you have highly a Nintendo recommend. Switch.
We very highly recommended Mario Odyssey. This one is also very, ooh, very good.
I might recommend this one more.
I mean, I could say, wow, there's more to it. Like,
I think this one would entertain a larger audience.
Yes. It's less about the... I mean, most of Mario Odyssey for me is just finding the Power Moons.
Mm.
But there is a lot more depth to Breath of the Wild in very many cases.
Oh yeah, it's thick and wide, like a hearty sandwich. Like a good old-fashioned New York hoagie.
That's the thing about this game, though, is it does make me very hungry. All the cooking, I really want to eat all the time. You get such good, fresh ingredients.
Oh yeah,
and it makes, never go bad. And I see them sizzling in the pan, I'm like, I need to make food.
I'm always grossed out because... The playthrough that I was watching, they kept eating raw meat. And I'm like, dude.
Is it the Game Grumps playthrough?
Yeah. And I'm just like, throw it in a pot with some salt and maybe some honey or something. Just stop that.
The salt is the best.
I love, yeah.
I break open every rock because I need that salt.
I'm the salt and meat combo is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, how about some housekeeping?
Yes.
You can find, Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch, probably for $60, even used. Used copies are still going for high amounts.
It's
people
a pretty,
love this game.
I mean, it's very jam-packed with stuff, so. But,
housekeeping. If you could review us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, that'll make us happy. good reviews mean more people see us, and it inflates my ego, which has recently been deflated along with my TV, so I could totally use that right now.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at Cozy Co-op Podcast. It is the best way to find out precisely the minute when our podcast goes live. I also sometimes tweet jokes and internet memes. I have not touched Peach yet, don't worry.
Thank God.
It is a Peach yet free zone. You can send us business casual emails, which we got a new one. I got to tell you about that one. I forgot.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't hear about this one.
To cozycoop@thelizardrock.com. Send us an email. Suggest a game to us. Comment on a game we're going to be talking about. Just whatever you want. Send us pictures of your...
Spider-Man.
No, that was last week. Aww. Send us pictures of your horse in Breath of the Wild, I guess.
Yeah!
No, send us pictures of Beetle, actually.
I have two horses. One is named Mighty Pip after the flower. The other is named Basil after the herb.
That makes sense.
It's very nice.
I have one named Basil after the pop star.
Mighty Pip is so pretty.
I don't have a horse. I lied. I'm sorry.
I have two horses and they're great.
I like how there's like horse stats.
I stole one from a goblin.
That's rude.
I killed him, so he wasn't using it.
Oh, I mean, he's still going to be resurrected in the next Blood Moon.
I hate Blood Moon.
So he's going to resurrect and be like, where's my horse?
We need to wrap this up.
Yes. The news you heard earlier can be found at thelizardrock.com. I write news there Monday through Friday most of the time. If you want to support the podcast, buy yourself a game, one-time donation, any of that jazz, you can check out more information on that at thelizardrock.com/support. Next week's episode will be Marble It Up, the spiritual successor to the Marble Blast series. I'm very excited for this one. You, not so much, but you'll play it.
Okay.
You'll learn to love.
You will play
it. You'll understand why I'm so excited soon enough. So tune into that next week.
That's it for us today. Cozy up with us next week on The Cozy Co-op.
Outro music. Thank you.
Nope, I'm not putting that one in.
What if I ate a raw frog?
I don't want you to do that.
In game.
No.
Okay, fine, in real life.